People do send naked selfies to bots. Luckily, it's not that often. It's about 2% of the images, but when someone does it, they do it a lot. So that the average normal image, like a regular image, would get sent to a bot once. The average naked selfie gets sent in about 5 times. So there's some weird hurdle you get over where you think it's okay to do, you just keep doing it. And then in that 2 month period where we check the images, there was one person who sent the same naked selfie 266 times.
All right, who knew? Well, we surely have a lot to learn about bots and bot interactions and people. But if you have a bot or you're planning on building a bot, look, let's step back, pause, and look at the data that you have about all of these interactions, analytics, and improving your bots. I'm John Pryle, and welcome to the Impact Podcast. Welcome, Artie.
Thanks a lot. I really appreciate this. Glad to be part of it.
And then why don't you just now introduce yourself and tell me what you and your company does?
Hi, I'm Artie Merritt, one of the co-founders and CEO of Dashbot. We're a bot analytics platform. And when we refer to bots, we really mean any conversational interface. So it could be more text-based like Facebook and Slack or voice like Google Home or Alexa. And we actually provide a heck of a lot more than just the analytics. We have tools to take action on the data too.
Now, I don't think this is my typical behavior. I hope not. But since I've got you here, and since your company is all about analytics and making a bot experience better, I'm going to take the opportunity and just whine a little bit. You see, it's a while back, but I downloaded a bot from a news provider. It was cool. I mean, it simulated an SMS experience. It included some icons. It'd give the news a thumbs up or a thumbs down. It could learn what you were interested in, or so I thought it was. But at the end of the day, I'm not sure I loved the content. I'm not sure it was the right vehicle for me. And I'm really not sure I could figure out what I wanted. And I don't know. I felt it was like serving up the same stuff to everybody. So tell me, how can bots be made better to work for everybody, to work for guys like me?
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, for starters, just the space in general is relatively new. So some of the bots, you might find some crummy bots, but it's much like any new platform. The first couple of things might be a little bit, you know, on the crummier side where people experiment and learn, you know, what works better. But this is where the analytics really comes into play and can be really helpful. With conversational interfaces, it's all unstructured data. You know, users can say whatever they want to it, right? And so it's hard to know all the possible things someone might say. If you think of with web and mobile, the links and buttons are predefined for you. The use cases are predefined. There's only so many things you can click on. Where with a bot, I could say whatever I want. So I could say to that news bot, you know, show me articles about, you know, this particular topic, or, you know, I don't like this thing, right? And how would the bot developers know what people are saying and how to respond to those things? So when you have the analytics, you can see all the different messages coming in, and you can see where your bot potentially is breaking down, like where, you know, people might be asking for something that you're not responding to, or they might be asking for it in a different way. So in the news example, if they look at the analytics and they see that, you know, you might say, I don't like this, or stop, or something to that effect, they could learn from that to know what to send you and what not to send you.
Oh, for sure. And I do think the future is bright if they could figure out the right way that I want to communicate with it.
There's one more thing, though, they hinted on is the button click, like the clicking menu items. So these are conversational interfaces. What got us really excited about it is conversation is just much more natural, right? When you think of all the videos of two-year-olds swiping the iPhone and the iPad, the same things happen right now at devices like Alexa and Google Home. You know, kids already know how to interact with these things. That's just the natural way we communicate. So with Facebook Messenger bots, they and some other platforms, they allow you to do buttons and quick replies. And what we found through the analytics is if your bot skews, and just in general anyways, if your bot skews more to buttons and quick replies, engagement drops off significantly versus ones that allow for more free-form conversation.
Oh, interesting. I think about getting started sometimes, and maybe I'm nervous, but I know there are kind of cool pizza bots, and I could just send an emoji with a pizza. But how do we get people started? How do I even onboard? It doesn't have my credit card. I don't think it knows who I am. I seem to struggle with a lot of the new apps in terms of maybe I got to go to my computer or log on, set up a user ID and a password. How do we even get people started into this space?
Yeah, it's a good question. So because it is a relatively early in this space, some of the same challenges that we see in previous platforms are repeating themselves a bit. Like if you think of the mobile days, user acquisition, engagement, monetization, those were all issues. Like how do we acquire new users? How do I monetize them, right? How do people discover my app? The same thing's happening right now. So there are folks that are experimenting with this a bit. And some aspect of it is, a part of it's on the platform side to make some improvements. So the first issue is just acquiring users and discovery, right? So some platforms have stores, some don't. Kick has a store where you can find bots. Initially, Facebook didn't. It was just when you're inside search, something might come back as a bot versus another person. When you search inside Messenger. So we had the same bot that we launched on both Facebook and Kick. And after nearly a year on Facebook, it had about 100 users total. where that same bot on Kick after 2 weeks had 15,000 users. And the big difference is one had a store, one didn't. So people could actually find the stuff. So that's one part of it. The other is how do you use these things, right? So people, I'm talking a little bit more on the Facebook side of things, perhaps you created a bot and you ran an ad to get someone into the bot, you drop them into the spot, a user might go, who's this person I'm talking to now, and not realizing it's a bot. So there is some aspect there, like not knowing what to do. So we found some customers learn that having someone go to a landing page first, or creating a video that shows, here's how the bot works, and this is the things you can do. Some of those things helped a bit, or have some sort of quick onboarding in the bot to let people know this is what it does, right?
Real life story. I'm heading down to see my 90-year-old father tomorrow, and he doesn't do well with the phone anymore. And I decided I want a home appliance, and I want him to say, call blank. So call the family. So I'm going to do this. So I was researching it. So I'm on the website. I'm not going to say which vendor. I was on all the websites checking it out. So while I'm reading the how to set up the device, a little chat window popped up and said, hey, can I help you? So I think I'm close, but it's good to validate that I was on the right point, that the device could talk to the phone, blah, blah, blah. So I start chatting with this person. And I say, so can you send me a link with some more details? And the person wrote back and said, well, actually, the link you're on, the page you're on, is exactly where you need to be.
Okay. What they just revealed should be fine. And of course, I was on a specific web page when that chat window popped up. And of course, I started chatting away. And I had spent a few minutes with this person or this bot. And I had sort of forgotten that I had previously been working through these web pages. So to me, it seemed a bit jarring to me, and I was a bit rankled. I'm not saying their reference was inappropriate, but it affected me somehow. And I think it changed the way I communicated with the system at that point. I felt like my tone did change. What should a business do?
One thing we have inside our platform is a sentiment analysis tool. So it gives you an idea of what the user's feeling based on the words that they're using, if they're using more positive or negative words, right? And we look at it at the individual message level, the words the person used, at the transcript or session level, and then at time intervals. So if you're the creator of that particular bot, you could see, for that day, the average sentiment was X, right? And then what we did is we added some additional tools around it. One thing is alert. So you could get alerted if the sentiment's starting to go negative. And with that, there's a whole slew of things you can do. One of the additional tools related to it that we have is this live person takeover. So imagine you were chatting with a bot. It was more AI based, and you were getting frustrated with it. And when you start to see the words you're using are starting to skew more negative, or maybe you repeated yourself like 3 or 4 times because it's not understanding. And because it's real time, it could send the alert. And then with the alert, you keep on the other side, could say, get it notified, hey, this user is having difficulty, and they could pause the bot, insert a live person to help lead you through to whatever the conversion was.
And Grandpa's going to have a great time with all these other cool features. And I wrote back, don't push it. I just want him to make a phone call. So I think when somebody reviews, and I didn't add that to my comments in the end, but I'm assuming when somebody reviews that script, they should catch that as a negative sentiment, correct?
Right. Yeah, this context is part of it. Yeah, exactly. You need to see, if you see the whole transcript to get an idea of the context of why you said that too.
So clearly, bad experiences are amazing opportunities to learn. And I love the thought about just turning off the bot and bringing a human being in.
Is there a flip side to that? I mean, companies should focus on getting better from the positives, right?
Yeah, one of the things we've been doing is publishing industry reports, like write-ups around the data. The idea is to help the whole ecosystem rise up, everyone make better bots, like float all ships kind of thing. So we share the insights that we're seeing, things like, what are the most common messages people say to a bot? Do you know what the most common message someone says to a Facebook chatbot? It's just hi and hello, right? Which it might seem obvious. I mean, that with conversation, you start with hi and hello. And so people are doing the same thing in chatbots. You know, somewhere around 60% of the chatbots get hi and hello as the message. But I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, I think it's about only about 50% or so respond with some form of welcome message. We had a meetup a few months back and someone in the audience said, hey, can you take a look at my bot and give me feedback? So we pulled it up and the very first thing we did is I typed in hi and it said, I have no idea what you're asking me. And so that's not a good experience, right? So we share those kind of things, like hi is very common, having the handling messages like stop and help, those are also very useful. In these platforms that support rich media like images and audio and other types of content, people are sending those in. So it's important to take a look to see what they're sending in. And even if you have some sort of response, like, oh, thank you for the image, right? You're starting to create a personality for the bot. Those ones that create the personality, in general, you see engagement go up.
And you're looking not, you don't really want to end up to the point where they say help or stop or one words. You mentioned earlier natural language processing. So I take it that's where you want to make sure bots are.
Yeah. So part of it's the early days. So we see all sorts of different types of bots. Some are using NLP, right? The natural language processing. And it's, you could say it's like an AI bot. Some are some sort of regular expression decision tree. Others aren't even that. There could be just really well done, you know, story or script writing. And then there are other ones that are basically just clicking buttons and responding to the buttons. Yeah, I mean, we have on the NLP side, what we're doing is the sentiment analysis, the clustering of messages coming in, and we're starting to work on clustering of the whole transcript. But yeah, when you see things that are more conversational, that's when engagement's a little bit higher. But people could still do one words. I think it goes back to one of your earlier questions is, how do I interact with this? Or how to get started. So sometimes people treat it as search and I'll just type in one word or two words.
So we'll kind of build almost a relationship.
Some of it's, you know, referring more to the ones where people are typing, like the Facebook Slack type bots. When you get on the voice side of things, then it is more, a bit more conversational. People talk a little bit more normal. You say, Alexa, play XYZ on Pandora, right? It's not just keywords and hellos and stops for the most part.
Very cool. So going down deeper into analytics, there's some basic analytics that are universal, whether it's, you know, user acquisition, engagement, monetization. So from your perspective, what does it really mean to measure a bot's health?
In terms of analytics, we have, what do you think of as all the traditional analytics, the users, sessions, engagement, retention, right? That's just table stakes. It's pretty standard what you'd get from, say, a Google Analytics or Omniture. Where it gets much more interesting is the conversation-specific analytics or the bot-specific metrics. So that's when you have the things like sentiment analysis, you have the message flows and funnels. That's what it's referring to. If you look at, say, your error message or your I don't know message, you could see all the messages users said beforehand that led to those and then decide whether you want to add support for those or not. We have filtering on the content types. We do behavior flows and behavior funnels. With that message funnel or message flow report, you also get an idea of your AI response effectiveness if you were doing AI. So there's a whole slew of new things there, as well as the transcripts themselves, having that kind of data. Sometimes when we talk to, let's say, a big brand, they'll say, hey, we want to use your analytics to, you know, identify, you know, success metrics and KPIs. And then they'll pause and say, can you tell us what the success metrics are or what the KPIs are? And it really depends on the use case and all, right? But what we see happens when people first get started is the amount of messages going through the bot, the number of users, like the somewhat more, I don't want to necessarily say basic, but they're just looking like, hey, I had so many messages per month. And that's kind of an indicator of whether it's taking off or how people are using it. But then once they start getting a little bit more into it and diving deeper and actually looking at the messages, folks on our platform really like is that message, what we call a message funnel report, but seeing, you know, if to pick any message in or out and seeing what happened before and after and navigating the flow, because that's where you really identify those issues where your bot might be breaking down or not responding to things correctly, or you might identify new use cases. So some of those things I mentioned, like the highs, hellos, stop, help, that's where you start to see that. So a couple examples, we have a bot on the platform. It's a Cricut bot. You can get Cricut scores, and they look at the analytics every day. Like he said, they spend at least 30 minutes looking at that message funnel to see what new messages came in. So initially it started out with just giving the Cricut scores. So you follow a particular team, it's going to send you out the scores throughout the game. What they found is people were asking about players and player stats and all that, and they didn't have support for that, but they saw all these messages coming in. And so they decided, well, let's add support for that. The other thing they noticed is these Cricut games go on for a day or two, or they go on forever, right? And if a user's team is losing, sometimes they get so upset that they would block the bot. So this company had paid to acquire the user. Now that user blocked them, they'd have to pay to reacquire them. So they saw this happening and they added effectively a stop functionality, but it's mute. So they added, when your team's losing, you could type mute and it would pause the score so you don't get upset, and then you can turn it back on. So that's the difference between a lost user and a retained user.
And that's real life, because when my team was losing, I turn off the TV and kind of move away. Now, but it's interesting, data specific. So this is kind of cool. So when I think about e-commerce, there would, one of the measures is cart abandonment, that they're always trying to go back and find out what you put in your cart they can make you buy. And now this really is bot abandonment, which I had never thought about as a measure before. But how many other types of metrics do you see that are very kind of bot specific that bot builders should be concerned with?
A good one you just mentioned, like the abandonment. So we just created a report on exit messages. So what was the last message on both sides? What was the last message a user said, or what was the last message your bot or skill or action said that just ended the conversation, right? So you can get an idea of what's potentially either causing an abandonment, or those could be positive. We were talking about it in a negative sense. It could be something positive that was the success, right? They bought the pizza, or they bought the t-shirt, or whatever it was. So looking at that's really important. The message funnel, those sort of exit reports, the sentiment, people ask us about it quite a bit, but sometimes don't know how to use it. But I think in general, it gives you an idea of the feeling someone's having with the bot. Are they having positive experiences or negative experiences with your bot? One thing to look at is the different content types. So we had, there's another Facebook chatbot that is basically a weather bot. They found users were sending in images to the weather bot. And you'd say, why are you sending an image to this weather bot? And it turns out these users thought of the bot as their friend. And so you send images to your friend, so why not send one to this weather bot? And they came up with like a quirky response to it. And that's what helped create the personality for that bot. And they just saw engagement go up.
I was going to think about a little bit about going back to the voice things. Do you see differences in terms of what you're able to measure with a traditional, Facebook Messenger or Slack bot versus the Alexas and the Google Homes of the world? Do you see that as much very different?
Yeah, there's a lot of differences. First is it just in the terms of like the nomenclature and all you use. So I've been saying messages quite a bit. Like some of this is because it's new. People are still defining some of the terms. But when you're talking about voice skills and actions, the more common term would be the utterances. What did you actually, your message into Alexa, you would call an utterance, for example. And some of the more text-based chatbots, you have the different content types. Obviously, you can't send an image to Alexa, at least in the devices. Google, you can through like Assistant on Android. So the content ends up being different. And then some of these are more synchronous rather than asynchronous environments. And the reason I bring this up is with something like Slack, you can have multi-user sessions. Multiple users can interact with the bot in the same channel at the same time. That's very different. And then with something like Facebook, it's asynchronous. So once you interact with a bot, the bot can keep sending you messages. You interacted with it today, this morning, and then it sends you a message later on that night, kind of thing. Where with Alexa and Google Home, it's more synchronous. Like, in fact, Google is synchronous. As soon as you send a message, it responds back. It can't proactively send you a message, 2 hours later.
Well, that's a different design point. I hadn't thought about that. There's no push.
Yeah, there's no push. So some of the analytics where they get interesting though now for the voice ones, where there's some big differences here, is they're all, for the most part, they have NLP, because they do the speech to text for you. You know, if you're a developer, if someone said, hey, what's the weather in San Francisco? You'd get the text, what's the weather in San Francisco? You get that the intent is check weather, the context of San Francisco, that kind of thing. So there's all sorts of reports around the intents. So there's the core utterances or messages, there's the intents, and there's the context and parameters of the intents. So that's really interesting because you see what's mapping to what. So perhaps your intents might be breaking down. That weather example where you said, you know, I'm thinking of buying a jacket, what's the weather in San Francisco? Did it even match your weather intent? Or if it matched your weather intent, did you realize that this has this whole other, you know, possible use case there? A distinction between Alexa and Google Home that's really important to know too. That example I keep talking about, like, what's the weather? If you said to Google, if you said, hey, Google, what's the weather in San Francisco? You'd get the raw message or raw utterance, what's the weather in San Francisco? The intent is check weather. The action to take is, you know, look up weather. The context is San Francisco. Now, if you said the same thing to Alexa, all Alexa would give, you know, the developer of that skill is the intent is check weather and the what they call a slot or parameter value is San Francisco. So you don't actually get that what the person said.
Wow. Interesting. I didn't realize that. So the analytics behind that will have, obviously you have learnings to do as a programmer, and then you've got to understand, you guys will help them in terms of analysis, in terms of what's working and not working as well for them as well.
You know, I mean, speech to text is actually pretty, you know, it's pretty good right now. But even then, there are commonly used words. So the example is, we met these guys that were building a voice bot that would remind you when to take your medication. And they started out with an Alexa skill, remind you when to take the medication. And they had to make their own translation dictionary that the parameter came across saying, let the door. Then they knew, oh, that was Lipidor. So they had all these different things. So you can imagine there's probably other, you know, vocabularies like that, that, you know, might be industry specific or less commonly used words that it's not going to get the exact match. So you have your other phonetic match.
But shame on them, because there are absolutely speech to text, you know, medical dictation systems that have been around for a long time that must have figured out all these medicines along the way. They just had to grow into that one as well. As we kind of walk to the end of this thing, let me just have a little bit of fun with you. Tell me a little bit about the game analysis you did around a Slackbot trivia game. Tell me some of the, I read a pretty cool blog post you put up there. So tell me a little bit about that.
It's one of the top Slack bots. We have it for demo purposes, but it gets a lot of data. So there's some interesting things. First, the trivia is only, it's US-centric trivia, the questions that they came up with. So it'll ask questions like, you know, name state capitals, and then people will start saying, you know, Paris and London and this, and they don't realize, oh, it's US states. And the thing is, they get mad at first, but then they keep playing the game. So you see the sentiment might be negative, but then they come back and keep playing it anyway. You know, people tell you exactly what they want from the bot, because it's, you know, you can say whatever you want. So they tell you exactly what they want. They also tell you what they think of it afterwards. So you could see people getting upset. In this case, there was these guys in France that were playing that game, and they were getting mad at that, and they got mad at another one about Sesame Street characters, so they didn't know the characters and stuff. But they kept coming back, and we realized people tell you what they want. Why not just ask them what they think? So the games were 60 seconds. You play, you get so many questions within the 60 seconds. So then as soon as the round is over, we added this question that says, what did you think of that round? And people will give you the feedback right there. And then we have the analytics, we just look for that question, what do you think of that round, and see all the messages people said. And there's a command inside to stop the game. Someone can type stop and the game ends. So we'll look up stop and then see where they stop. Quickly, you quickly identify questions that people don't like or they don't understand. So that was interesting. When we added the live person takeover, when we tried it inside this trivia game, people would be playing the game amongst their teammates. And then sometimes we would jump in and just help them. We'd say, oh, try typing hint for like an answer, or try this. And then there's some points, basically it increased the engagement, but there were points where it started kind of crossing the line where someone would say, they're like, is this a person or not? Is this still a bot? Because we were helping them a little bit too much, but it was kind of fun.
I would just summarize here. So based on the data you've seen, you know, the best advice that I'm taking for people that are going to build better bots is to absolutely understand your users, get as much data as you can, keep learning from the goods and the bads, and you've got yourself recipe for success with a little bit of help from Dashbot, I think.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Yeah, I mean, you often say without the analytics, you're flying blind a bit, right? And especially in this, these types of interfaces where people can say whatever they want. So it's really important to look at what people are saying, what they are asking for, and then, you know, either add support for the things that you're on or decide what you want to do with those types of messages.
Thanks for listening. If you like what we're doing, we'd appreciate your telling other people about the show. Better yet, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes or write a review. Doing so will really help ensure that more people can find us. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the Impact Podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you go to find your podcasts.